And Bill, we have a quorum. Excused is Council President Ben Peterson. And I will now ask the Honorable Metro Council Schroeder.
Oh dear.
That's it. Oh. One of these days I want to do that and see if I can do it off the cuff. Because I bet I can.
It's been done before.
Yes, it's, yeah. It's well,
it was a quasi-memorization one of those times.
Okay, so the pressure's on. Please note that we are on the third floor, in case you hadn't figured that out. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out through the door in the northeast corner of the room and go down the steps to the second floor, and then exit through the main entrance by the reception desk out to the courtyard. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk on the second floor to Grand Avenue. And then the fire extinguisher is located in this room in the back corner here alongside the dais just behind the wall.
Thank you. We'll move on to our work session topic. We have regional solid, first item, regional solid waste system infrastructure. And Mr. Roy Brower is our Metro Property and Environmental Services Interim Director and will provide a presentation and awesome council discussion.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, Council. So we're going to tear. All right, I'm here today. This is the first of a three-part series. This is the high-level work session discussion about the future of the solid waste system. Next week, we'll be talking a little more explicitly about some specific properties and projects in an executive session. So today, I'm looking to review the current state of the solid waste system. Review some of the service options and improvements that we're considering. As I said, next week will be a review of the projects and properties that we're thinking of potentially engaging in, and review financing options for the system, and then discuss next steps. So today I'm really here to review the solid waste, regional solid waste system as a utility. And Metro's role as the chief planner for the system. Also, I wanted to highlight some challenges and opportunities with the system and seek your guidance as we work on it. So, as many of you know, we have, or are starting to learn if you're fairly new at the council, we have a fairly outdated 40-year-old system that really is in need of modernization. It no longer is state-of-the-art like it was back in the 90s. There's been a lack of serious public or private investment in the system in the last 20 or so years. We are over capacity at a number of our facilities, overburdened at some of the facilities, making it more difficult to find the space to do the recovery of waste that we need to be doing. At some of the facilities, we're experiencing much longer wait times from customers, which gets very frustrating for those who are waiting in line. We're seeing, over the last 30 years, population growth and population shifts, and challenging transportation infrastructure, which have made it more difficult to provide equitable access to all in the metro region. As you're also aware, global and local markets for recyclables will continue to have an impact on the system. And I would note that cheap rates at transfer stations essentially make it more difficult for MRFs to make investments in recovery. And by cheap, we charge just under $100 a ton at the metro stations. But if you look to the north, Seattle, King County, they're charging over $150 a ton. So we're a great bargain to close it up. So the theme of today is really preparing for the future. We, thanks to this council, we now have a regional waste plan that's in place, which will serve as our framework for the next dozen or so years. And I think it's important to stress that the future is not just about garbage and how we move garbage. It's about jobs. It's about getting equitable access to services. It's about health and the environment. It's about reducing greenhouse gases. It's about building a more resilient system. And it's about public services. In my opinion, working in this field for 35 years and 20 years at Metro, same juncture as when we were closing the St. John's landfill back in the early 90s. And we had to, working with a private partner, develop a regional landfill and a series of transfer stations to consolidate and transfer towards to that Columbia Ridge landfill owned by Waste Management, which I know many of you are going to get to tour later this month. So hope you're looking forward to that.
Will there be barbecue?
There will be food. it won't be the Condon version of barbecue on Main Street, but it'll be good. But in my opinion, it's time for Metro to start to build a system for the future over the next 10 years. I remind you, and I know you're well aware of this, that the regional waste plan entailed extensive community engagement with work groups, with community conversations, with surveys, with leadership forums and technical work groups. Thousands of people were involved in the development of the regional waste plan. And out of that came the values that we use as filters as we think about the work that we do in PEZ and in Metro and in solid waste. These are not foreign to you, but I'll just repeat them very quickly. Protecting the environment and human health, conserving natural resources, advancing environmental literacy, fostering economic well-being for all, ensuring resilience of our system and our garbage and recycling system, and providing excellent and equitable service. So this helps to guide us as we think about the future. And to get a little more specific, I wanted to highlight the goals in the plan. First one is that we should be investing in communities so that communities regard solid waste facilities as assets. We should be improving the system for recovery, especially for food, recyclables, curbside recyclables, and yard debris, and to meet changing markets and evolving community needs. We need to maintain a system of facilities to ensure geographic distribution of services and more equitable access to both the facilities and the services. And we need to ensure that routine garbage and recycling systems can be restored quickly following a major disruption, which could be anything from a windstorm to a fire in the gorge to winter weather in the gorge to an earthquake. We need to start building that more resilient system. So I will point you to the handout, which is the thing I want to come back to. It's a single page. Thank you. That looks like this. So this will be sort of the thing that I'll want to get your input on at some point when we're near the end. But I wanted to just review with you and remind you of the basic solid waste services that are provided, which include public cell call. This is the line of traffic actually yesterday out at Metro Central. So you get some idea for types of trucks and vehicles that come through our stations to the tune of about 300,000 trips between the two facilities a year, almost 700 a day. It's an extensive number of folks who come through our facilities. This is not the most picturesque recycling depot, but it is a sort of recycling depot. We're hoping to build and design better, more customer-friendly recycling depots at some of the stations that we're going to be talking about later. We also have the need for permanent household hazardous waste drop-off. We have that currently at Metro Central and Metro South. We have the roundup events that we do throughout the year from about April through October. But we need more permanent household hazardous waste drop-off locations in the region. And finally, is commercial transfer. These are the big garbage trucks that go up and down every street in the region at least once a week and collect your garbage or your recyclables or your yard debris and organics, and then bring it to one of the transfer stations, whether it's one of the public stations or one of the private stations. As we start to think about designing the system of the future, we've got some other things that we think should be considered in expanding those public services. And we're looking to a large degree to the north, to Seattle, to Tacoma, and some of the new stations that they're building up there, which are really state-of-the-art and much more modern facilities than what we have down here. An example of that is creating some kind of an education and learning center that people can learn about where their waste goes, how to recycle, and other educational topics. Potentially creating more opportunity for resale of goods so they don't have to go into the landfill. Potentially creating repair stores where goods, electronics in particular, could be repaired. Providing some community assets, meeting spaces, and so on. We think it's time to build that into our designs. And public parks and trails. This is the park right outside the Seattle North Transfer Station. As you can see, it's a playground. They've got a basketball court, a number of public amenities public appreciating there.
So their cell phone line up must be as long as ours. The kids can get out and play. Well,
I don't know that they provide babysitting yet.
Right.
And then I wanted to just go over some of the other kinds of improvements that we think need to be designed into the program. Greenhouse gas reduction. I think the waste system plays a key role in that, from creating greener facilities, more energy efficient and water efficient using facilities, to collecting the food waste and turning that food waste into energy. Building or creating and getting greener trucks, greener on-site equipment, less polluting equipment. We have a lot of opportunities there to improve our greenhouse gas footprint. Another thing that we think is really needed is more flexible space, more open space for transfer stations. That way, all the work can be done inside, but you also don't have to run into columns and jersey barriers and walls and trying to move your trucks around to get to a space or to dump your load of waste. And this is another example of just the loadout bay up at Seattle North, which, by the way, we hope to take a group of folks like you up there probably after your August break. Once you fully embrace the landfill, then we think it's probably time for you to go up and see some new modern facilities. We also think we have to be a little more proactive about resilience and using solid waste facilities as a way to stage disaster debris. And again, whether that's from a storm or an earthquake or some other event, we need to be able to have a place where we can store this material until we can work our way through it while keeping the normal garbage and collection system operating. We also want to be thinking more about the fueling, so renewable natural gas. This is a picture of the Wilsonville facility, WRI, of their CNG facility. We also think we'll have to consider the design of future electrification of the fleet. This is a picture of a Mack truck, but I think Daimler is also thinking of electrifying garbage trucks. And so this is a definite way for the future. These are very good vehicles for electrification because they have a very and autonomous driving, although I'm not sure I'm a fan of that yet for garbage trucks. But they could they drive a predictable route. You know exactly how much fuel they're going to need or how much electricity, how much of a charge they're going to need to run their routes. But this is something we need to be considering for the future. We need to keep our rail options open. We know that the large regional landfills, both Roosevelt and Columbia Ridge, are able to accept train cars full of waste, and we, it may not pencil out yet, it may pencil out in the future as we look at this as an option, especially on the west side. So, this summarizes all of those items and needs that I just went through. And we'll come back to this and have some discussion about this at the end. But I wanted to sort of get all these in one place. My question for you is, are there other things that ought to be on this? Are there things that are on here that shouldn't be on here? And just get your general input on that. So now I want to talk a little bit about just overall investments in the solid waste system. Going first to the private sector, and this for us as a public agency is less well known. Based on a little bit of phone surveying, we think there could be $10 to $13 million invested by the private sector in the next 10 years. We believe there's a lot of uncertainty out there right now in the waste system, and that has a tendency to stifle investment. And we also fully believe that more consolidation of haulers and facilities will start after 2020, after the new disposal contracts kick in. Secondly is the Investment and Innovation Grant Program that Metro started up last year. I think thanks to the council, we'll be expanding the program from a $3 million annual program to a $6 million annual program, which over the three-year pilot of the program means there would be about $30 million invested in the system. Half of that from Metro, half of that from private companies who need to match. We just kicked off year two of this, so we're midway into the cycle, the three-year cycle for the pilot. Our focus is on food recovery and curbside recycling capacity, and those types of proposals will have some preference over other types of proposals that we get. We have increased the capital grants to $750,000 per year or per grant. And we're going to make the program grants available throughout the year. Those are capped at $75,000. So two Metro programs. One is, of course, the Community Enhancement Program. This is a program that's been around for a number of years, actually a number of decades at some facilities. This is basically a host fee that is paid on every ton of waste that's brought into a facility. So this generates about $1.3 million annually divided among seven transfer stations, so two public stations and five private transfer stations. And so that will raise about $13 million or so over the next 10 years. We will be expanding the program to cover the City of Roses, which was franchised and approved just a couple of weeks ago. Gresham Sanitary Service, which had their tonnage cap expanded. We also, as we talk about new facilities, the community enhancement programs will be established at those facilities as well. And we do think, and I've heard from a number of you, that it may be time to sort of look at this whole program again, sort of its purpose and focus and function and funding base. And so that's one of the future topics we'll be bringing back to you, get some input and see if it's time to make some changes. I believe it was 5 or 6 years ago when we put the latest version of the program into place. So.
Just a clarification on that past the slide right before this.
This one?
Yeah, the top right there is 30 million three-year pilot.
That includes the match.
Yeah, so 15 and 15.
$2.6 million and $3 million plus the match.
Okay.
So 15 total metro contribution.
Yeah.
And then it,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Got the man. All right. Then the second area I wanted to talk about, and this is the part that is on the reverse of the handout that you have. This is just a general, for your purposes and for your input, of the priorities that we are pursuing right now as we think about building out the system. So first and foremost is food waste collection and processing. For a lot of reasons, we've been working on that for a number of years. Jennifer Erickson has made a career in this. And I know she'll want to retire in the next 10 or so years, so we want to get something done.
I can't believe that.
We also want to modernize the existing infrastructure that we have. We think that's of paramount importance. We have these capital assets that are getting more fragile and aged and are stressed, and we need to make sure that we can keep our infrastructure going as we move into the future. We want to improve the geographic distribution of services. We're particularly well aware of the need on the west side, especially that came out of the regional waste plan conversation with community groups, that's going to be an important new addition. We also know, as I mentioned earlier, Metro South, South Hall needs to find another home so we can move about 200,000 customers off that site and return Metro South back to what it was originally intended to be, which is a commercial transfer station. We also, as I mentioned, we need to expand the public services, in my opinion, and we need to be able to provide more equitable access to those services. And then we need to improve the recovery infrastructure. And I mentioned that because this will be another one that we come back to council to talk more about as we let the state convene to process play itself out about what the future recycling system ought to look like. We're engaged with DEQ and a number of other stakeholders about what the future may hold for recycling and recovery. And we think there will be some opportunities there to improve and expand infrastructure and markets and things like that. And we also want to continue to pursue opportunities for public-private partnerships. However, that may manifest itself as we get into some of these siting discussions. So, just a real quick overview of the 10-year regional investments. Estimating private investment maybe as much as $13 million. I&I grants plus match would be range of $30 million. Over 3 years. This is another program we'll be coming back to council on at some point. Since it's in a pilot, 3-year pilot, we'll be wanting to visit whether we want to continue that on for another 3 years or longer. So so that'll be another topic. We want to get through at least the second year funding and efforts before we start to have that discussion. And then community enhancement programs. Again, around $13 million. While it's a small program, it pays a lot of dividends to the host communities that have agreed to take on these transfer stations in their neighborhood and community. And the last column, I'm not going to reveal until next week. But it's bigger than the other three. So with that, do you have any questions? And I just wanted to see whether you understand the problem, whether I need to go into any more details on that, whether, as I indicated, whether there are other services that we need to be thinking about or eliminating that you think are not, shouldn't be on the list. And then your agreement with the general priorities on this list. So those are really the three things I was hoping to get today from you all.
The comment I want to make isn't specifically on here, but I think it kind of feeds into this. So first of all, I appreciate all the presentation. It was really nicely done, and have no disagreement with any of it, and really pleased that we're moving ahead in this direction. So thank you for this. I really look forward to, as we move through this process, it's really exciting. But there's a program that I'm thinking about, because I think infrastructure would play a role in this, and that's the one with the work that you'll be doing at some point, and how we help those people that live in multifamily housing improve their recycling opportunities. And so I just want to put that out there, think about that. So what kind of infrastructure is going to be needed to support people that live in multifamily housing? And I appreciate that we're going to have the possibility of having a bigger presence, a presence on the west side of the region, so you maybe have three transfer stations in the region. But I would think at some point we might even want to consider having neighborhood collection points for recycling, where people that do live in multifamily might be able to take their pot, whatever they want to recycle, and go and have some public support of that. It's just a notion. I don't know where your thoughts are going on that whole program. And I recognize that I'm out in front of you. It's something I think that we should be thinking about, our public investments and how that will support people that live in multifamily housing.
I appreciate that comment. Multifamily is one of the issues that we are going to be taking on as part of the regional waste plan. A number of aspects of that, especially once we get the regional waste advisory committee going, and that's probably one that will be very relevant to setting up a subcommittee or task force to work on that issue. We realize that too. And I lay all this out, as I've laid this out, this is really, in my view, sort of what we need to do to bring the basic system up to a level that we should be, as opposed to moving beyond that. I think one of the aspects of this that we would like to pursue, too, is more of a master plan for the region for facilities and getting exactly the kind of thing you mentioned, more locally based neighborhood types of community recycling centers, some of like what we saw up in Toronto and some of the regions up there. So that is one of the things that we're going to be working on as well. So.
If I may, but I look at the priorities. And not so much, I don't know that I'm seeing outcomes here as paths to the future. And if, particularly if you look, I'm looking at the regional priority outcomes page here. And if you look at the right side and those identified places where we need to do work, to me, many of them are linked together. particularly prioritization in the short term, you know, with our new food waste collection program going forward, and the challenges we've had of coming up with a contract with someone to deal with that processing, that obviously we need to work on that soon. But to me, that is linked together with modernizing the existing infrastructure, also improving recovery infrastructure. I think there's an opportunity there to link those together as we move forward and achieve all those things. Don't think of them necessarily as separate functions, but all parts of the same function. And then link that together with the last one there. We need to pursue opportunities for public-private partnerships. There's no reason why we need to take this on alone. I'm sure that there's opportunities out there in the private sector to take on some of that burden and for profit. I mean, frankly, let's be fair. And it's something that there's things that we shouldn't be doing if the private sector can do it, and we need to explore how that can work. But I see in the short term, we need to address our ability to process the food waste that's going to be coming our way. And I'm pretty positive that part of your plan for near future discussions is surrounding that. Am I correct? Yeah.
No, I totally agree with that approach, and I think they're very connected. I think as we start to talk about some specific projects and sites next week, you'll see some of those opportunities a little more graphically than what I want to talk about today.
Remind me if it's... Is it central or south that it was originally designed for a different purpose? And we've been kind of working around that all these years, and we need to address that if we're going to be able to improve our recovery rates and ability for waste separation and recovery and deal with the wet waste, with the organic waste.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This was actually originally I understand it, and that was before my time.
It's going to be an incinerator, was it not?
Yeah. Or a garbage burner. I don't even
Okay, whatever you want to call it, yeah.
Yes, that's why there's a pit.
Yeah.
And that's why there's an opening at one end.
A pit in the way.
Just be pushing the waste into that. That's really
Courtier than I.
Well, Roy, I do have to say I think Pez is light years ahead with PowerPoint presentation elegance. I mean, that was just I don't know if I was watching a TV show or with all the animation up there, but
it worked. Where is Alan's? Alan is our graphics guy. He does a great job.
Well, you need to keep the attention of elected officials with potentially short attention spans. So.
I was engaged at the 10-second threshold now. I'll admit we've had quite a bit of an opportunity to work on this. I think it might be the third or the fourth time I get to hear the presentation, see the presentation, and digest it and liquefy it. I'm just kidding. So one of the things that I mentioned before, when we look at the regional priority outcomes, on the far left we have public-private and partnerships. However, there's one really important sector I feel like is not addressed, and that's community or community-based organization. And I know that was a big cornerstone of the regional waste plan, and I know that Metro is going to make that a part of it. But for me, there's a certain element of demonstrating that I would want it to be considered at the same level, public-private in partnership, even though there might not necessarily be a facilitation or an operation side on the waste system. And on a similar note, on the far right, I agree with Councillor Dirksen that a lot of these things are timely, they're aligned. I know that they are directly related to the regional waste plan and the goals and the actions there. But there's also this other sense inside me that if we're going to make, you know, whatever that secret bar of investment is on the Metro side, that I would definitely want to have a new opportunity for engagement on what do communities want to see at those facilities instead of us saying, well, this is what we think we need to see. I think for good measure there, some of these things are ambiguous, right, for what can fall under them. I know that Councilor Craddock has mentioned a lot about single-use plastics and recovery facilities and different things we could do locally aside from the community and multifamily work, as well as styrofoam. And I know we have, you know, different private partners across the region. But in terms of creating equitable, geographically distributed services, you know, I'm sure that, you know, there's communities in Hillsborough and Gresham and North Portland, et cetera, that would love more facilities to take styrofoam, single-use plastics, and things like that you can't put in your bin. So not getting too ahead of ourselves, but including that community perspective. So I'll just leave that. Aside from that, great presentation. I think it's on the mark. It's timely and ready to modernize.
Appreciate that. And absolutely. It's almost like a threshold thing for me and for Pez is that community is going to be engaged and involved in all this, especially as we start to narrow properties down and we start to talk about what is really needed in different communities, because I think there are going to be different needs, different drivers, different expectations. And we definitely will be looking to counselors to help us identify people who can help provide that kind of support and information and connection with the community. So whether even if it doesn't show up on this on the left side, it's there. Mm-hmm. So
I'm just going to throw this out. It's kind of related to what you mentioned today. So as we move forward in our ability to recycle, a lot of it's going to have to come from the private sector or public-private sector, public-private partnerships. And so I'm just kind of thinking about through your presentation since it's off my – I've lost it on my screen here. So probably the likely direction of how we're going to develop these facilities that were going to help us be able to recycle with plastics. The direction we'll go is probably using the innovation grants. It's probably the best route. Is that how you see it? Is there any other options that we might have that I haven't considered where there would be opportunities to have facilities come on board that become available to us for help us improve our recycling efforts, particularly around plastics?
We are exploring some other options. I would say, at least in the immediate future, I&I is probably the best venue, but we are looking at other possibilities for other ways to develop partnerships with the private sector, especially around plastic and fiber recovery and styrofoam recovery.
May I just add to that? I recognize the technology has to probably come first before we have a facility. So we're looking for before we can have a market for these products, we have to have the technology to be able to process it, and then that of course then informs us on what kind of facilities we need to support that. So I recognize that there's definitely a process, but I just want to make sure that we definitely keep this as high on our list of things that we're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. And again, part of this is we're trying to let the state convene process play out through the rest of this year. But I'm sure we'll be coming back with sort of a similar presentation on recycling infrastructure late this year or early next year.
Thank you.
Thanks for the great presentation. The kind of themes that I picked out were particularly the tension between kind of where we are as a region, recognizing we're a little bit behind and we're sprinting to catch up, right, as we have this kind of global shift. That tension held against, if you're looking at the public, the private, and the partnership, two of the three looking for some certainty, and those how we hold those together through a planning process. So really recognizing the need for good engagement and some kind of clear directives on those front. And in my mind, Councilor Dirksen really brought up the place where we can put that to the test first, which is in our food waste. But also, I think, as Councilor Craddock just mentioned, when it comes to technology, know that there are changing technologies and allow for the space to hold that in our kind of physical infrastructure process. Finally, I'm really heartened to hear your reference to a need for more HHW sites. That's something that I think that we can do some really innovative work on to make sure that folks around the region have a place to drop hazardous products. Lastly, I'm really interested in the role of Metro staff in public-facing roles, particularly as we lean into education, not just on the global system, but on a product-by-product basis.
Yeah, my struggle here is I think we have to put in being patient and being urgent at the same time. I think that's a difficult role to play, but that's where I feel we're at.
Oh, that's a life statement right there, anyway.
Yeah, facilities that need to be replaced or modernized, and we don't know the full scope of everything that ought to be anticipated to occur in those spaces. So, yeah.
Any other comments? I would add, I'm kind of encouraged to hear you talk about sort of being patient and being urgent and getting that balance, because I do think there are, all this work is incredibly important. We want to go quickly, but things are changing so fast. That it's important that we're making the best investment possible. So there'll be some places where maybe we stretch ourselves and we really get a bit of other, where we wait to see how other people do things and see how that plays out. I think about, you know, how you do that balance, for example, on the natural gas versus energy infrastructure, right? One might argue energy is really going to be, electric versus natural gas. There's a lot of folks out there that would say, it's going to get to electric and it's going to get there faster than maybe you think. On the other hand, there is some natural gas infrastructure. We know it works. We know some of our partners are using it. So, that's the kind of thing that I think the kind of really being as up to speed as we can on, current trends, best practices is going to help us in the process. Similarly with all of the technologies about recycling, not only what's happening in the market, but what do we think long term is the market, all of those technologies and setting ourselves up so that we have the ability to be flexible down the line, that we're not setting our facility up for incineration and then realizing pretty quickly that it's not going to be used for that. We're stuck with it for 30 years having that gym or something. So I hear you. Being very aware of all that in the presentation tonight, I think that's great. I want to, a couple other areas I think we can be very proactive is, this is where maybe there's a little more engagement in council sometimes, eliminating certain kinds of waste from the stream altogether. So being intentional in our plans that will be somewhere in our plans, that will be a part of our strategy, today it's styrofoam and plastic bags and straws, right? And there's always calls to make in terms of are those the right kind of, I think they are, but we don't know what the future ones will be. But I think always proactively looking out for what are those next opportunities that we can help clean up the stream. Great. The last thing I will add is that. I really, appreciate Councilor Craddock's sort of continued efforts on the multifamily. I share her enthusiasm for that. 40% of folks maybe some folks that are doing it in their building, but a large percentage of our population doesn't have access to composting, to recycling. I was just visiting because I like to go visit solid waste facilities in other countries, I was just doing that and saw the way that they were getting into multifamily. So it's all, I know there's a lot of different ways of doing that, but I do think that being intentional and clear about that in our, you know, maybe even right there in our regional system needs, and that seems to me like a big component of our infrastructure. And I think it fits into a lot of things here, but, you know, I see where we call out some specific strategies, and that might be worth considering spelling out somewhere a little more attention.
I appreciate that. We are looking around the world at how people are taking on waste in different ways. In fact, I've got a couple of staff people down in San Francisco just today, just to go look at food processing equipment in two or three locations down there. And so we're not going to go anywhere in the world, but we're reading a lot, we're learning a lot, we're researching, and staff is spending time going to view some of these things that we need to understand better. We know that there are good programs. Certain parts of the world and certain parts of the country focus on other aspects of managing waste or recyclables different than we do, and we need to understand that better. And I'm committed to that kind of learning.
One other service or improvement facility I would like to see us do, and I don't know if it's really been called out in our waste plans. I apologize. This might not be in there. Is that every city has the single-family people that live in single-family residential have ability to mix food and yard debris together and have a process as one. And not, as those of us that don't have that ability, our food is going into the garbage stream. And so that would be one more opportunity to remove food from the garbage stream, even though it's not, we won't send it to a food waste recycling facility, but at least would through the composting. So we need more facilities that can compost yard debris combined with food.
I appreciate that. That comes with a burden as well on compost facilities that are located.
Question that advisability of mixing those two.
A little off topic, unless you wanted to build off what Councilor
right
said.
Right ahead. Right ahead.
Another thing that did not just pop into my mind, but I think about regularly, and I know it's in the regional waste plan, in terms of circles inside of regional priority outcomes, either in the middle column or the last far right column. Would be just the jobs component, recognizing capital investments result in jobs and economic impact. So it's already going to happen, and I think it's an important thing to put in there as well. So,
just a basic observation. Roy, I think what our conversation today has illustrated is that we're pretty passionate about the waste system, reducing waste, leaving every opportunity that presents itself, whether it's an educational opportunity or an investment opportunity. And maybe when you bring us a piece of the system, we need one of those you are here maps. What you're asking us to do is give a nod of understanding towards some near-term capital investment needs for our existing system. And we're very excited about the next stage, but I want us to understand that you hear that, but it may or may not have a direct impact on how you take this next set of decisions forward and bring them to us. But this is, I think, a very healthy indication of our passion for doing as much as we can as soon as we can.
No, and I appreciate that. And I just thought it would be helpful for you all to get more of this next week,
yeah.
To have more of a holistic system.
Okay. Okay.
Level, which I just remind you, we're probably behind 10 or 12 years for a number of reasons, but even the plans that we did for facilities back in 2008-2009 said we didn't have much expectation for those facilities to continue to exist beyond about 2015 or 16.
We're good stewards of assets, I guess.
We are good stewards of assets, and yet it's time to become better stewards of assets and to start to move in the right direction of creating more infrastructure in the solid waste fields.
Any any last comments or anything you didn't get to say, or are we, did you get everything you need?
And you'll see us next week.
We'll review current projects and properties, talk a little bit about financing some of these projects and properties, and then we'll start to talk about next steps. So I'll be happy to come back.
All right.
We will see you then.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next item is legislative update, and we have Andy Shaw, Metro Government Affairs Policy and Development Director.
Yeah. This is the headliner.
Good afternoon. Andy Shaw, Government Affairs and Policy Development. A little more a set of information about what's going on down in Salem today than last time. The House Bill 3431 regarding blind inventors came out of the Senate Rules Committee on a unanimous basis and is now in the Senate floor. So that's looking like it's getting towards the final set of votes in the Senate, which is a good place to be this time of year. We are, by the way, also about a few weeks out from signing that, or a couple weeks out from signing that. So very close to the end of the process. So most of these bills really need to be in that final step of the day.
Would you pull the microphone a little closer? Make sure it's not on.
It was not on. There you go. I'll repeat that. So the House Bill 3431 regarding blind vendors, and this is the legislation that relates to the work we do to bid out our food service at the convention center, among other types of vending that or request for proposal procurement work that we do. And it doesn't just affect Metro, but affects the city of Portland and many other local governments. That legislation came out of the Senate Rules Committee last week on unanimously and is headed to the Senate floor.
Oh, excellent. We
report
concerned that nobody in Salem was going to see its importance.
Yeah, I think the opposite is true. It has been,
obviously,
yes.
So, and I'm pleased because I was worried about that.
Yeah. And, you know, good work to Randy Tucker, our contract lobbyist Jack, other partners who've been involved with the legislation along the way to make the case to legislators. And I think it also squares with it was clearly not their intent to have this impact when they passed legislation in 2017. So all that came together nicely this session. House Bill 4023, which is regards transportation network companies, so Uber, Lyft, et cetera. This is legislation carried by Representative McLean, and it is a blanket preemption of local policies on regulation of TNCs. We and local governments across the board have been opposing this legislation. As Randy says, terrible legislation. Violates many of the principles that you've laid out for local governance and decision making, and specifically the ability to access data, et cetera. It appears to be not going to pass, but it is in a position. It got advanced out of the Revenue Committee and to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation, which is an odd move. So we and others are staying vigilant and trying to make sure this legislation does not pass. There have been counterproposals about ways to create some level of state regulation, but leave room for the locals to make other decisions or higher tier decisions around insurance, safety, data sharing, et cetera. So we'll keep you posted on that as hopefully things don't advance.
That's a good question. What was the intent of that legislation? Why was it important to create preempt cities from having any influence over this?
So it is not uncommon for a specific industry when a couple different local jurisdictions establish differing regulations to seek some form of statewide standard that then preempts local governments. That's not an uncommon discussion, and local governments engage in this debate all the time and try to find a sweet spot between some kind of statewide standard and some kind of flexibility. In this case, I think the sense is the standards are so low, the standards are so incomplete that it steps backwards from what Portland, the Port of Portland, and others have already established.
So it was the industry that actually initiated this and got
this
support.
This is an industry bill. Yes.
Thank you.
You asked a question last week about the plastic bag ban proposal, and just today that proposal passed the Senate. It's now headed to the governor. So we expect, from everything we've seen, we expect the governor to approve that bill, and that bill should become law. So a big change from where we were when we were talking about legislative priorities for the year and talking about whether this was a proposal you might want to bring forward or wait for the legislature to act. And
great news for our recycling processors.
Absolutely.
Fewer stops of the machinery to pull out the bags.
We've reported to you consistently on 2592. This is the cleanup legislation for House Bill 2017 that includes within it authority for Metro to separately from the county seek vehicle registration fee authority. That bill has now passed. It passed the House earlier. It's being processed in the Senate, which it'll probably just get sent to the Transportation Committee of the Policy Transportation Committee of the Senate. So on its way through to the Senate, which is good since that it only started moving a few weeks ago. So it's moving rapidly now. Household hazardous waste. I would say Randy is giving this bill CPR. It has been stuck in Ways and Means for some time, and I think I reported to you last week that we were getting indications that it might be stuck, that there may be some concern. So the industry continues to oppose the Household Hazardous Waste Bill. They're concerned about regulation of the industry and the requirement to stand up a stewardship program for a set of defined household hazardous waste products. Their concern is don't regulate us. There are some collection programs in some parts of the state.
Are these national firms or are there some Oregon firms with concerns about this legislation?
I don't know. I don't know that level of detail. There's certainly industry organizations that represent those who sell the chemicals have been opposing. I think some of the I don't know if the retailers have been involved in that level of opposition, but the producers, the folks who would be responsible for actually standing up a stewardship program, have consistently raised concerns, and our staff have been trying to work for some time. You may recall, prior to this session, we held a work group to invite folks to come in and talk about the best form of state legislation, and we had industry partners at the table. They essentially refused to either support or suggest alternatives to the legislation that had been introduced in past years. So we came forward with the same form of legislation. It's had some amendments, as bills do in this process, but got stuck in Ways and Means. You may recall we've also reported that the costs that would occur at DEQ, which is why it goes to Ways and Means at all, are covered by fees that they are allowed to charge. So there's no general fund impact to the state. So it should be a pretty easy one to move through Ways and Means, but we will keep pushing. I know Randy today just talked to leadership in the House side to try to get them to go push their members and see if we can't leverage the bill out.
Is there any disproportionate adverse impact in lower Columbia communities?
In lower?
Columbia County, Clatsop County, that part of the state.
Is there any benefit for them, is that what you're saying?
Well, I understand what you're asking me, yes.
I'm just curious.
I don't know that thought. Yeah. That may be related to something else I'll update you on in just a minute. In fact, right now. House Bill 2020, the Carbon Cap and Invest legislation, which has been the subject of numerous work groups and discussion over the course of the session, went quiet for a bit while they were dealing with other big budget issues. Just in the last week, I believe it is, Senator Johnson, who's co-chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee, produced a whole range of potential amendments that would reduce the effectiveness of the bill from our point of view. Our understanding is there are some amendments that are being considered, but not the amendments that Senator Johnson has introduced. We understand from a news story that President Courtney may choose to temporarily replace Senator Johnson on the committee in order to produce the votes to move that bill forward. That was just in the Salem Reporter, I believe, today. So that relates, I think, to the question you were just asking me a second ago, yes.
Some of the opposition for the household hazardous waste come from the senator?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You need votes on in both a majority of House reps and a majority of Senate reps on the committee to actually move a bill out. So that's, we believe, on the Senate side, that's where we're having some significant troubles. House Bill 2001, this is the missing middle housing legislation. As you know, we've been supporting the main content of the bill, which would redefine how single-family zoning is defined in state law and allow for additional types of housing in existing single-family zones. In the last month and a half or so, a series of amendments have been considered to that legislation that relate to our urban growth boundary process and actually have no relationship to the underlying goal of the bill, which is to allow for a broader array of housing types. So Randy is testifying today in support of the underlying concept, as we have been all along, but continuing to note concerns about the changes to our urban growth boundary process and, in particular, the housing needs analysis process. That, as in his words, would ask us to do an analysis that's immediately wrong, because it tends to look more at history than at what we actually are trying to forecast, and the economics that we see affecting choices people make and the choices developers make on, so both the demand and supply side, as was evidenced in our most recent urban growth boundary analyses. So we'll keep you posted on that. We've had a long back and forth dialogue with the speaker's staff, both our attorneys and our policy staff, trying to help them understand how we do our urban growth boundary analysis and the housing needs analysis now, and how potential changes that would affect our ability to actually produce what we think is the most accurate picture of what the future population growth, job growth, and housing needs would actually be. So this may actually require, if the bill passes as it's drafted now, may require us to come back and try to clean some of that up to avoid a problem in our future urban growth boundary analysis. House Bill 2003, this is on housing needs analyses and how cities conduct those analyses. This bill actually largely does not affect us, because they've generally been pleased with the level of housing needs analysis that we do. This is really focused on many other cities and jurisdictions that don't have the level of complexity or detail in their local housing needs analysis. It's really aimed at trying to understand what's the gap in affordable housing locally, which affordability has not been a main focus of past analyses, more supply and demand with this is trying to get many more cities to do that more in-depth affordability analysis. Senate Bill 226, this is the Damascus is still not a city legislation. It is an effort. It's been sailing through, just introduced in the Senate side. It's been sailing through its first committee, headed to the Senate floor. It's an effort at a few different levels to clarify that the legislature authorizing a vote in the city was legitimate, that the city's vote was legitimate, and if a future court finds that those aren't good arguments, they layer in a couple other arguments for a city that's already surrendered its charter and has had its tax rate go to zero is no longer a city. So they've got I think there's three different approaches, if I have it right, for clarifying that A, the vote was legitimate, the vote should stand, and if not, there's other reasons why the city is still not a city, which would allow for residents of that area in the future to try to reincorporate on their own, or some residents to choose to annex to one of the cities nearby or a combination thereof. But rather than standing up the city with the charter that existed that was so dysfunctional in terms of being able to get a comp plan in place, which would trigger everything else, or put development fees in place, which would pay for the infrastructure, et cetera. Very strong support, it sounds like, in the legislature to take this approach for now. Other quick updates. Actually, that's all I have. I think, Councillor Lewis, you asked a question of our lobbyist about the LOX bill, and we are hearing that the LOX legislation may be now not moving any further. that's really according to lobbyists talking in the hallway and hearing what they're hearing. So Randy's pursuing a little more information on that, but it sounds like there was enough concern over sort of who would be holding the ball on that if they put money into repair of the locks that's supposed to match with funds from the federal government to get the repairs going, that the question of who would actually govern that was remained somewhat nebulous. We tried to be helpful in that process, but I believe there was enough discomfort about a state agency, eventually becoming the entity that holds the ball, that it may be hard to move that legislation now. So that's what we're hearing.
Heard similar things. I think it will be very. They use the word discomfort. I will have discomfort when the Army Corps moves in to make a dam instead of the locks.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity, I think, to have a real table of collaboration, and I'm disappointed we didn't get there this session.
Can you clarify something, Council Lewis? You might know this. So, wasn't the Corps of Engineers going to help contribute some of the funding for this? But they were hoping to get a match from the state to some kind of a match. Is that correct?
So, if there was going to be work, they would be able to put money in the form of funds for part of the study and work that needs doing. But that, in and of itself, isn't real cash money. It's their work.
Oh, I see. Okay. So the question I had is, will we lose out on any opportunity or any benefit the Corps can give us for the locks repair by if this legislation isn't passed? Will they move on and not be an active partner?
I think they're an active partner until they fully dispose of their asset.
Okay.
But I think the timeline on that is such that we should really, after session, recognize a missed opportunity with some one-time-only money on the table this session, heading into what could be a recession, combined with the fact that the clock's ticking on when the Corps doesn't want to hold on to this asset anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, my understanding is they have resources to essentially decommission the locks, and once they do that, they can step away from responsibility around the locks. Opportunity was to identify state and other resources that could match with the resources that the Corps of Engineers have and use that to actually repair the locks.
Right.
But it needs to have a home to go to.
Yeah.
The Corps of Engineers does not want to, it will not own the repaired locks with operations and so on. So
apparently neither would DSL, the state agency that had been.
Apparently not.
Mm-hmm. It's too bad. There's a huge opportunity there. I mean, obviously, you already know this. I'm thinking just for the travel industry alone, to have boats go up. The wine industry would take advantage of that. Tours similar to what happens on the Rhine in Germany, and it's too bad. Yeah.
So, unless there's other questions, that's all I have for you today from Salem.
The cleanup for the 2017 includes the Rose Quarter, and we had clarification about funding for the Rose.
I'm not aware of that.
I think the Rose Quarter was pretty defined in 2017. The question would be more around 205.
Ah, okay. Because there was a comment about Boquist wrote a letter to ODOT saying, hey, just wanted to be clear, that's that funding allocation, so I guess it was just in reference to the original, was for the Rose Quarter. And I wasn't clear whether or not ODOT I'm sort of getting a little bit into other ODOT's continuing to stay committed to the sort of minimal amount of capping that was part of that. That came up, and it sounded like maybe that was not a commitment anymore, or maybe it's not really been made as a commitment one way or another.
Councilor Lewis pointed out when I made that remark that co-chair Boquist is one of four co-chairs and can't speak for the entire committee and can't put a gloss on legislation anyway. So
The 2017 fix is there were folks who were supposed to receive that money whose town's name was misspelled in the bill, and there were references that the cross-reference didn't actually use the right word. So it's cleaning up that sort of thing, and I think we are lucky to get some additional clarification on something we needed.
So, as I recall, there were a couple of communications from the co-chair about his recollection of the purpose of some of the highway, the project funding in this area, and what the outcome was meant to be. My read of it is that it was at odds with what was actually passed by the legislature. So the legislature... It
doesn't matter what his opinion is anymore.
Yes, he may still hold that opinion, but it's not consistent with the bill that was actually enacted in terms of the projects in this region. And I think the reference to that in our discussion last week was more to note some dialogue on in Salem. Yeah. But there's no legislation to change the legislature's commitment to it. The question about ODOT's project management state right now, I can't answer in terms of, we'd have to get some of the transportation planning staff to come.
I would be interested, not here,
yeah.
I would be interested in just getting a little more clarity about where that project is and
yeah.
The funding for the Rose Quarter?
Yeah.
So I may have missed this. So has the legislature approved funding for 205?
No.
Okay.
There was a normal amount of planning money in the legislation itself that passed in 2017 for 205. There was also direction around standing up some form of congestion pricing in some sort of time frame. There was a report back, I believe it was last fall, to the legislature on the status of 205. There has been legislation to try to identify funding to pay for the project. In the meantime, ODOT has rejiggered a couple different projects that they're working on and identified some additional planning money for that 205 project, the Abernethy Bridge and the lanes going out to Stafford Road. There has also been some discussion of using some of the windfall money if the state determines they don't want to. They want to retain some of the kicker refund, that there's been some discussion of using a portion of that to help fund the Abernethy Bridge in particular. There have been discussions of using it to fund other things as well, so I'm not close to those discussions. I don't know what the current status is, but there have been a few efforts to figure out where can that money come from if in this legislative session for 205.
So they're still in a planning stage,
and they're not
even quite ready even to ask for construction dollars.
I would say that they're close to being able to ask for the money to build the project, which doesn't mean you don't continue to do the engineering work and the other work, design work, to get to 100% design. But they would argue they're at a place where they're close enough to say they have a sense of what the budget is, and if they got the money, they could build it. They would say faster than Rose Quarter.
Their estimation is they could have shovels in the ground in May of 21, okay. Which is before the conclusion of the next long session.
Okay.
Which is why we made a Clackamas County and some people who are sometimes supportive of Clackamas County made a play for some additional funding this
okay.
session.
So I know that as when we did the JPAC trip, ODOT's been applying to federal highways for funding to build the upgrade the Abernethy Bridge. And I was surprised to hear that they had applied three times. I didn't realize they had applied that often and have not yet received that funding. And of course, we're lobbying for that when we were there.
Yes, and of course, that resource is incredibly competitive. A small amount of money for national competitive program, yes. As you recall, one of the challenges we have is competing when a chunk of the costs for a bridge replacement like that relates to earthquake safety, and that doesn't score as well on a cost basis as bridges in other parts of the country that aren't prone to falling down in an earthquake. So one of our appeals to our federal partners was, is there a way to change the terms of the application
yeah.
process to take that into account? Because that's a real need and a real cost for projects like that on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. No.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pretty cool about that Fossey Bay.
Great. Just really quickly, and I think I've let most of you know this already, but I just wanted to make it formal. We have a lot of people in interim roles, and Heidi Ron has agreed to serve as the interim deputy chief operating officer, so she's backfilling for me. while I fill in at the interim COO role. So anyway, those of you who know Heidi know she's fantastic. When I got here a year ago, she was taking over the new asset management and capital planning program. Prior to that, she spent 5 years implementing the Zoo Bond very successfully on time, on budget. And then I learned through this process she's done a whole number of things at Metro over the last 13 years. So she brings a real depth of experience and will help keep things on track as we go through this process. So I'm really grateful to her. And you'll be seeing more of her around these processes as well. And then she's going to be taking over all the internal service departments with the exception of finance and all retained finance while we hire a new chief financial officer. We are going to move forward on that recruitment. Hopefully in the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll launch the CFO recruitment. It'll be open for about 6 weeks, and then we'll go through that selection process. So if you have any good CFO candidates, send them my way. We'll try and make that hire relatively quickly. Oh, and I should let you know, just as a reminder, we do have our new HR director starting July 15th. So Julio Garcia, we're excited to get him up and running as well. So.
Sure, thank you. I have two. First, I was privileged enough to spend my lunch hour with the environmental science class, the AP environmental science class, from Centennial High School, who has who's gotten a ton of support from our PES folks at Metro and their work on working in middle schools and elementary schools, wherever sixth graders are located these days. On climate change and on sustainability is just incredible, and a group of youth that are the leaders of the present, not the future. So I would encourage all of you to think about what schools Metro works with in your district, and I'm taking this advice myself, and figure out how we can better support these programs because they're incredible. Second, I just wanted to make sure everybody's aware this weekend is the Clackamas County Coordinating Committee C4 retreat. I will be attending on behalf of Metro, though I know Clackamas touches other districts as well. So happy to pre-conference or invite you into those discussions. We're going to be focused on the two things we know matter the most, housing and transportation.
I will be there on Friday.
Oh, you're there too. Okay, great.
Are you going to... I have gone to those in the past and not able to go this year.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to report tomorrow is the groundbreaking for Gresham's Rockwood Rising project. This is quite significant. This project, the voters of Gresham passed the Urban Renewal District in 2004, and so now here we are in 2019, and they will be officially breaking ground. Well, they've already broken ground, but the ceremony tomorrow is the groundbreaking for the construction of the first construction of the triangle. They call it the Rockwood Triangle. This is where Stark and Burnside cross each other in Gresham, and it's was formerly the Fred Myers location. Fred Myers, and it was one of the first purchases that the City Council, Gresham City Council, purchased with urban renewal funds. And they've been working since then, after that purchase, to plan for development on that property. And it's taken a lot to figure out, to get to a point where they are able to break ground, so it's pretty significant. Roy Kim is the developer, and the Metro is helping through our TROD funding, and they are also looking into the notion of using some affordable housing funds for housing on the property at a later time. There's multiple buildings that are part of this project, and initially there will be there's going to be a market there, a public market where, and then there'll be support for small businesses to do that are interested in getting the food service that will be able to start their restaurant, and so there'll be this support for them. And then another way that Metro has been able to help through our solid waste services is the grant for them for the freezer space that they need for these small companies that are starting restaurants and doing food preparation to store their food. So we're helping in a variety of ways.
I have a few updates. So I will be traveling in the next 2 weeks, I guess, depending on how the time works out. So this from this Thursday, June 13th to June 19th, I'll be in Glacier Park for fun, backpacking. And June 21st to June 24th, I'll be in Denver with the city of Cornelius on a delegation for All-American Cities. They're finalists, so I'll be supporting them and hopefully bringing back an award for the illustrious District 4. Also, I was invited a week ago by the Meyer Memorial Trust to represent, myself on council, or represent council on a work group that wants to mobilize philanthropy for racial justice and community land ownership models, whether it's a REIT, you name it. So there are a lot of really exciting partnerships for good that mobilize a ton of private money that, you know, is invested in back into the community. So I'll provide more updates as that comes available. Of course, working with Rukaya on a lot of different amazing stuff. Also, last Thursday, there's an exciting program that I thought that you would enjoy hearing about. So on Thursday, Centro Cultural in Washington County had a graduation for the first Latinx and all-Spanish master recycler program in history. So there were 20 people that went through the program. It was culturally specific, and it was really exciting. I did get to design the program, but not execute it because I joined council. So it was sad, but not. I didn't get to really be a part of it or anything like that. But I got to make some closing remarks, you know, as an elected, which is really exciting. And so I think there are a lot of shining lights of hope for how we hope to change the garbage and recycling system. And I mean, it's happening at Centro, it's happening all over the region. That's about it. It's supposed to be, never mind, I'll tell you guys later. I don't know if I can share it yet, but I think I have an opportunity to join a national board that does Latino advocacy efforts all around the country. But they told me to keep it confidential, so I'm not going to release the name yet.
Who specifically from the councils involved?
But it was important because they asked me to join as a Metro councilor, not as a representative of a Latino organization in the state. So I thought I would share, and that's about it. I'll bring back pins for you from Glacier Park.
Very briefly, the Southwest Quarter Steering Committee met yesterday. The primary topic of discussion was looking at choosing a connector from the Gibbs Street station on Barber Boulevard up to Markham Hill to OHSU and all the other activities up there. And the Green Ribbon Committee had nominally had a consensus on a funicular, which is an inclined elevator. I and several other members of the steering committee expressed concerns about the cost. If you look at the different options, and the two options that rose to the top were the funicular and the bridge and elevator. And the funicular is as much as three times the cost of the bridge and elevator for a system that would actually have lower capacity and have more impact on the Twilliger Parkway, physical impact. So we expressed some concerns, but out of respect for the Green Ribbon Committee's recommendation, we recommended to TriMet that they continue study of both of those two options, the funicular but also the bridge and elevator, and explore ways to reduce the physical impacts and the costs of both. So as we look for ways to, right now the overall cost of the project is estimated to be somewhere around $300 million. More than we could anticipate would be approved by the Federal Transit Authority. So we need to value engineer and find ways to do things less expensively, and that could be one.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. As I understand, the neighborhood is pretty concerned about this too, aren't they? They see the funicular as a...
Actually, they expressed that was their preferred option.
Oh, really? Because I've read articles where people were really concerned about the impact it would have on the parkway.
Yeah, to Williger Plaza Parkway? Whatever, sorry. I got an email from a constituent
on the Terwilliger area, then there's a natural area there about conflicting metro goals. So I don't know the area well, but I was clarifying.
So it sort of depends on whether you think the natural goal is the landmark view as you drive your motor car along the Terwilliger Parkway. Mm-hmm. You don't want to see this ugly white thing coming into view as you go by. Or your view or experience is of walking, hiking, climbing a trail through a wooded area. Hmm. And I'm showing my bias here. I think that the minimal impact of the elevator tower and the visual effect of the bridge going over to Terwilliger is something to be made attractive, mm-hmm. rather than trying to disguise. Never mind, I won't get into the detail, but this is a...
layout design, please. Blueprint design.
Well, landmark designations, there's a view corridor, there's a bunch of other city policies embedded, and there's also a lot of NIMBYism involved in trying to make it as invisible as possible and least inviting as possible to people who might not otherwise know there is a Terwilliger Parkway to walk.
Yeah, but done...
Now I'm really dissing on my own constituents.
Keep it as their own park.
Done properly, the elevator and bridge could actually become an iconic structure and could actually provide view opportunities that don't even exist now and could be done in a way and I don't mean in a more expensive way, I mean in a well-designed way so that it creates an attractive architectural feature. I mean, think in terms of the Oregon City elevator. It's actually a something that the community points to with pride. I'm actually thinking of the city of Paris 150 years ago, who were horrified at the idea of this horrible, ugly tower being built in the middle of their city, that it would ruin the streetscape of Paris and the Eiffel Tower.
Tell some diehards on that. What's your comment on this?
No, I had an update I forgot.
Oh, okay.
But the discussion of a funicular just sparked.
It's just the term funicular is just so, it's fun to say.
It'd be interesting to get, you know,
yeah.
Here, come up here.
Yes.
In market.
Because there's
competition.
Because that, I find that people...
We need to find a way to get from the station.
Oops. Next drawing.
The station.
And I have a question.
Okay, well,
be creating.
I just want to add. Well, the question is, where does this walkway end? Is that is it
the
KCI, KCI
Institute?
Okay.
The drive that goes up there.
So it's still, when you're at KCI, you still have a ways to go up before
go.
You.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question. Why was it called the Green Ribbon Committee?
But you know, there's a green ribbon, the Terwilliger Parkway,
as opposed to a blue ribbon.
The blue ribbon committee is one of those. Idioms about, you know, you put together a
prestigious,
yes, exactly, so to make a decision, but so this is sort of a pun, making it a green ribbon committee, as near as I can tell.
So I forgot to update you, my colleagues, about a very excellent meeting for a very excellent project, the Oglo Bridge. Reminder, that's from Oak Grove to Lake Oswego, and we're in the middle of feasibility work, and that's on quite a fast clip. But the first of three policy committees last Thursday evening, Mayor Gamba, Councillor Savas, myself, and Councillor Mance from Lake Oswego are the four members, along with our technical advisors. And we had a great discussion. There's a lot of community engagement. Over 300 surveys have been filled out, and the survey's only been open for a number of days. So that's an important thing for us to know, because it is one of the Tier 2 projects and one of the most iconic projects in my mind in our T2020 list.
Is the anticipated West Landing at the Foothills District in Lake Oswego?
Foothills Park is about there, yes.
And where's
it could be further south, potentially. And then on the east side, it's likely Courtney, or it could go further south from there as well. So the feasibility study is going to help us narrow in even further.
Is that it for updates? I will say one thing. You've noticed that fan club of folks who did drawing on Carlos Gonzalez's picture.
What? There's
strangers. So I could draw my own for you.
Oh my goodness. All right. Thanks, man.
this is your tradition.
Random fans that he's never met.
We sent him pictures.
Posting art of him.
Really awesome.
Twitter and other places.
I hope it's...
I appreciate the slender representation of me.
I hope it's more than Robert Liberty's sketches of his colleagues on the Metro Council.
Oh, it's absolutely terrible. Okay.
Is that a fedora?
Totally a beret.
A beret.
What do you do that during a council meeting?
This is John Charles. It's a French me.
We are hereby adjourned.